up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. This is Wednesday, July the 28th, and we're back here on the show today with another Word of Mouth Wednesday for you here on July the 28th. Big things going on in Canada as we are seeing in the headlines. Well, tonight we're going to get into one of the biggest issues we got in the nation. Currently, the controversy is swirling around the Canadian security infrastructure as simultaneously people are calling for the resignations of both the head of the RCMP and the head of CSIS, and the powers that be are becoming problematic. Well, to talk to us or with us about this crucial situation tonight, we're going to be interviewing the author of Dispersing the Fog, Paul Palango. Plus, we'll wrap up the one-month recap of the G20 chaos with some throwback audio from the summit protests that we haven't played yet. And then we're going to also get into some discussions, some music breaks, and more, all coming up today here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. I'll just be right back here with our first guest. My name's Daniel Libby. Stay tuned. CKLN 88.1 FM, Word of Mouth. CKLN broadcasting from Toronto, Ontario, Ryerson University campus, 88.1.
I'd just like to send a message to all the police here. You are divine and beautiful human beings. You have the glory of the universe in your hearts. You are men and women underneath your uniforms. Even though you all look the same, every single one of you is an individual. You're all genetic prototypes connected to the infinite absolute of the universe. You do not need to follow orders. You do not need to create a fascist police state world for your children and my children to live in. All you need to do is remember that you do not need to trade in personal morality for financial gain or for a power trip. No one has any more power over everyone else. We are all equal.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here on the show, trying to get in contact with our first guest here for the show. But until then, I think what you just heard there was a clip of Charlie Veach of the Love Police. There, just a quick clip of the month ago, what was going down 1 month ago, G20 protests. Charlie Veach was one of the activist that was in from out of town, actually, and he is still facing charges from the G20. One of them, involved impersonation of an officer, which I think was even based on a clip from one of the Press for Truth videos. PressForTruth.ca is a website you got to check out for if you're looking for some more info on what went down at the G20. Just because Press for Truth was doing a lot of work, and I guess they're even working on a bigger documentary now. I was just talking with Stephen Davies a few days ago about it, and I guess they got a lot of coverage, but they had just actually released their last documentary, United We Fall, which you can also check out at pressfortruth.ca. So what I'm going to do here, though, just until we get our first guest on, I'll just play another clip here. This one is a clip of, let's see what we got here. We got a clip of, here we go, a clip of Richard Fadden from his testimony, when his testimony in front of the Public Safety Commission of Canada about his comments about the secrets within CSIS and what to look out for, I guess, in terms of, his theories on foreign interference.
You said there is merit CSIS being more open about the threats to our national security. And yes, what CSIS does is to prosecute an inherently secretive mandate. How do you reconcile these two seemingly irreconcilable differences?
I think that what CSIS, Mr. Chairman, has to do in secret is our investigations, our inquiries, our tradecraft, the information that we share with foreign countries. That has to be done in secret. And I think over the years, CSIS has demonstrated that it can do that very effectively. That does not mean, though, I think, that we cannot talk in general terms, as can the government, about threats to the security of Canada, be they espionage or terrorism or whatnot. So, yes, there's a line there that has to be drawn, and sometimes it's not easy to know exactly where to draw it. But the larger part of our activities, of our operations, must remain secret. But that doesn't mean that we can't talk in general about threats and the people that we're dealing with.
Word up, word of mouth Wednesday. We're back here on the show. And what you just heard there, that audio clip, was actually an audio clip of Richard Fadden, his testimony, which took place, it was a few weeks ago, I guess maybe about a month ago now, in front of the Public Safety Committee, you know, in light of the comments that he had made in our interview on CBC, speaking about, you know, some of the secrets within CSIS and then, you know, his controversial views on foreign influence. Well, to get into that topic, and, you know, or we're going to get into a few of the topics here swirling around the media with our featured guest here. We have him on the line. Our next guest is a journalist, an editor, and author of such books as Above the Law, The Last Guardians, and more recently, Dispersing the Fog, the unprecedented look into politics of the Canada's National Police Force. Joining us today to talk about the current state of security in Canada, I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Paul Palango. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, yeah. Thanks for joining us today on the show. You know, and it is an interesting day to be talking with you because of the headlines that I'm seeing today about the current RCMP commissioner, William Elliott.
I did about 15 interviews yesterday, and I was on Canada AM the first thing this morning. So.
Oh, okay.
You're next.
Right. And what do you think is next with the RCMP? I know that William Elliott, this guy that's the commissioner right now, is talking about tremendous changes going on. Do you have any? What are your thoughts on this situation?
Well, I think that Mr. Elliott, in the 3 years he's been there, hasn't done very much change, and I think that one of the reasons for that is the more one gets involved in trying to run the RCMP, the more one realizes the RCMP cannot be run properly. Or even are managed in the current structure that it is.
Okay, oh, I see. So, with the comments on about William Elliott, the people there, I guess the comments in the media we're seeing is about him being abusive. You know, and then there's even the theory that it's Harper's fault for appointing a civilian. I guess are you thinking that part of the reason why William Elliott is being you know, or people are complaining about him is because he doesn't have the experience in the RCMP?
Well, you know, I think there's a bit of media spinning by the government, and I think much of Canadian society bought into it about William Elliott being a civilian. Calling William Elliott a civilian is like calling Wayne Gretzky an ordinary hockey player, you know?
Right.
He's no more a civilian than most of the Mounties, because in the last 10 years prior to him taking over the Mounties, he was involved in counterintelligence and security. He was the national, you know, the national security advisor to the prime minister. He, in various capacities in the Department of Defense and Department of Public Works and Transport, he was involved in security and counterintelligence. That's what he did. And when he was appointed as a civilian, even in my book, which came out in 2008. My last book, I pointed out that, you know, his background is national security, and the problem with the RCMP at the time was a number of national security issues, and the force was becoming very leaky. And it's always been my impression that Mr. Elliott was brought in there to sort of do crowd control on the RCMP and keep them in order and keep them in line. And he wasn't so much an agent of change as a crowd controller.
Well, okay. So you're talking about the book that you wrote recently, "Dispersing the Fog," where you get into the inside the secret world of Ottawa and the RCMP. And you know, I actually read the book. It was a really interesting book. And I know you take it back to you know, when you get to the highest levels, you're talking about the former prime ministers of Canada, and you get into four in a row: Trudeau, Mulroney, Chrétien, and Martin. And the one thing that they had in common, the Power Corporation, was the Power Corporation something that you found in the research that tied everything together?
Well, yeah. The, you know, I didn't set out to tell the story that I told. I mean, quite honestly, if you look at my book proposal to my publisher in Toronto, it was not the book that turned out, because as I started doing further research on the book, I sort of began connecting some dots, and the Power Corp is one of the big dots, because Power Corporation is a very, it is sort of the kingmaker of Canadian politics for the last 30 years, picking, you know, the successive prime ministers worked for them and went to work for them after leaving office. And Power Corporation got a number of deals, especially in its relationships with China, because it's probably one of the biggest players in China, working on the Three Gorges Dam and all kinds of other projects in China over the last 20 years. And much of its success and its wealth comes from its dealings with China.
Right, and this is actually what I wanted to get into when I started off talking about CSIS, and then we got into the RCMP, and then what you mentioned here bringing China into this, and I was going to ask you about something that you also write about in your book that involves both the RCMP and CSIS, and that was Project Sidewinder. Could you talk about what that was?
Well, Project Sidewinder began in the early 90s when personnel in the Hong Kong office of the Canadian Embassy in Hong Kong began to notice some anomalies in the issuing of passports and other documents, and an investigation was begun to find out what was going on. And that investigation was shut down, and then another investigation was shut down. And subsequently, seven investigations were begun and shut down. And but during around the fifth investigation, a guy named one of the Canadian counselors, or one of the investigators in the Canadian Council, came up with he and a Mountie, Gary Clement, worked on an investigation where they were able to link infiltration of the Canadian Council to organized crime in Hong Kong and China and back to elements of the Chinese Secret Service. So they wrote a report, a draft report, and they were asked to write a draft report called, it was called Project Sidewinder. And when they wrote it, it was suddenly ridiculed and hidden from public view. And this is a very credible report because the two people involved were expert investigators, and they were able to show that the infiltration into Canada of people from China who shouldn't be here, who are either criminals or espionage agents. And that was blocked. And they showed the ties, and furthermore, they showed the ties, the close ties between the people coming in and ruling members of the Canadian government. And that was the key thing.
Right, and that's why, your book is really interesting, because you have so many of these, historical facts, and this was even just within a few years ago, or within the decade. And I know your experience goes back too, because your other books, the Above the Law and The Last Guardian, were written in the 90s. So what I was wondering about, and because I like the book, I thought it was interesting to read some of the reviews, some of the critical reviews of your book, and then I noticed that there was the one in the Vancouver Sun that, it says, Palango says that in Canada's, it's Paul Desmarais of the Power Corp, who is the wizard behind the curtain. This is RCMP meets the Da Vinci Code, talking about your book, Dispersing the Fog. So they're trying to paint you as a conspiracy theorist. But then with all the stuff that we're seeing with the RCMP, and even with the CSIS, the stuff that happened for the past month that they've been talking about, it seems almost like your book is becoming true. Everything that you wrote about is, they seem like they're admitting to it. I mean, does what these controversies that we're seeing right now with CSIS and the RCMP, is this fulfilling to you, I guess?
Well, it's, every day they essentially prove everything I've said in the book. I mean, if you look at the latest controversy with the commissioner of the RCMP dressing down his subordinates. I reported that in Dispersing the Fog. It was one of the last things I found out before I wrote the book, and I talked about the behavior of Elliot, et cetera. And what happened was, as soon as the book came out, the RCMP put out a press release denouncing the book, saying all kinds of bad things about it. And the mainstream media really got upset with it, too, because they didn't want to cover it, because there were a number of issues covered in the book that they felt uncomfortable with, including the way I treated the reporters themselves and the editors, some of the editors in the coverage of the stories like Project Sidewinder, the Airbus affair, showing how they virtually were co-opted or allowed themselves to be co-opted and not telling the real story about what was going on.
Right.
And so, you know, this kind of vilification I found kind of odd, because I thought the book was very thoughtful and well documented. I mean, the main story that people got upset about was about Meher Arar, you know, the story I told about him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the short story is I went to tell one chapter I was going to devote to Arar about a poor Syrian man, as you recall, who was a victim of U.S. rendition and sent to Syria, tortured. He came back. There was the O'Connor Commission, and he got $10.5 million and an apology from Canada. And I went to do a biography of him, you know, a biographical sketch, and I realized after reading the O'Connor Commission and all the media reports about him that there was no real detail about Arar. And so I became curious about that, and so I thought I'd go to the companies that he worked for and talk to the people who worked with him. Well, the first company listed in the O'Connor Commission report, CIM 21,000 Inc., I found didn't exist anywhere in the world. So now I was really curious, like, what's going on here? And eventually it took me a year, and I found out the name of the real company, and that led me back to an arms dealer and a previous investigation in Montreal in 1999, and Arar certainly would have been caught up in that investigation and would have been known to the police. And so I had to wonder, what is really going on here? And not one reporter has ever gone to Montreal to check the court records of Montreal that I checked to either refute the story or to say I was right. And because I think for them to refute the story means that it would show that virtually everyone in the Canada, the Globe and Mail, National Post, CBC, were taken in by this story, as were many Canadians.
Right, right, and that is quite telling. I know there is a lot of mystery still with that, with whatever happened in that situation, extraordinary rendition. But you know,
mm-hmm. You look at an extraordinary rendition. When I started out this story, I'd been on radio and TV. Denouncing the RCMP for its treatment of Mr. Arar and describing it as a dysfunctional police force. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is a dysfunctional police force, and I show that in three quarters of the book, Dispersing the Fog.
Right.
But when I looked at the Arar case, I couldn't see anything wrong that the RCMP had done, and this had led me into these other areas. And when I got into these other areas, I find that Arar is not what he says he is, or what the government says he is. And that's what the story is. I said, there's something else going on here. And then the whole rendition story, I started to look at rendition, and I began to posit the idea that if Arar was what he appears to be, to me, a covert agent of some sort, then what happened to the other rendition people who were in rendition? And I found similarities between him and 10 others around the world who got involved in left-wing politics after they came out of prison. Arar didn't specifically, but his wife did. And all these ties that they began to develop. So I'm very suspicious of who this guy really is and what his purpose really is.
Mm-hmm. And I know that there is a suspicion growing within Canada because of the controversy that the CSIS director is involved with, Richard Fadden, when he made some comments about a month ago about Canadian officials being influenced or secretly working for foreign governments. Does this seem like a logical situation to you? Were you surprised when you heard these comments?
No, because it really goes back to Project Sidewinder. What Brian McAdam and Gary Clement and the people who wrote Project Sidewinder were saying, that this was going on. And in my book, I show how in other countries what has gone on in England, other Western countries, England, France, Italy, Australia,
right.
United States,
right.
How this kind of infiltration works. But in Canada, there's a complete blind eye to it. There is no instinct whatsoever to deal with this issue, which is considered by other countries to be a very serious issue.
It is highly possible then that the CSIS director is speaking the truth, and that there could be, you know, high-ranking officials in Canada that are...
Absolutely. You know, in my experience, he comes across to me as a man who is in much distress,
mm-hmm.
and because he's trying to do the right thing, and he's come up against forces inside government that will not allow him to do the right thing or his agency to do the right thing. That happened to Brian McAdam in Project Sidewinder, and I could show you like at least a dozen other cases where over the years where police and intelligence officers have come into situations where suddenly the whole world is turned upside down on them and they're made to look like fools. And they're not fools at all. They're telling the story, and that is the problem. I mean, it really is a problem, and I don't say that as a conspiracy theorist, because I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a reporter. I basically deal with the facts, and I looked at the facts.
Definitely, and that's why, you know, people can check out Dispersing the Fog to get a lot of the facts, and, you know, more info is coming out on all these situations. But if what we're hearing is true and that there is big problems with the leadership in the CSIS and the RCMP, do you think is there a way, like, I guess how can this be resolved? Is it all through the Prime Minister's office, or?
Well, the problem is that the CSIS director reports to the Prime Minister. The commissioner of the RCMP is probably the most powerful single individual in Canada, other than the Prime Minister, because of the powers that imbued in him under the RCMP Act. The RCMP commissioner is appointed by and serves at the pleasure of the Prime Minister. This is bizarre in a democratic world. Like, you do not have the chief of the federal police force reporting directly to the Prime Minister. I mean, this is a politicization that goes beyond the pale. So, I mean, Canadians have to wake up and realize that there is a serious encroachment going on into virtually everyone's rights in this country because of politicization of the police. The RCMP, I mean, the solution to this is basically slimming down the size of the RCMP, disconnecting it from the political process, and maybe setting up a rival agency or two to deal with some of the matters so that there is some sort of competition and some sort of oversight, that they're looking over each other's shoulder then, and you know, that there's some sort of sense of balance, because there's none of that right now. The RCMP is absolutely in control, it's defiant, and it's essentially unaccountable.
Right, and we're speaking with Paul Pelango, the author of Dispersing the Fog. And just one last thing I wanted to ask you about is, because you're talking about the people's, you know, civil rights and civil liberties going, well, we got a taste of that here in Toronto about a month ago. The New World Order was here. The G20 summit took place in Toronto, and it was the most expensive security situation, I think, in the history of the country. And I know RCMP and CSIS were involved with that event. I was just wondering, have you done any research into that summit, what happened there?
No, I haven't done any research into it, but it's predictable about the way things operate. You know, in previous conferences in Quebec and in Calgary and Vancouver, you've seen the way these things are handled in Canada, and there's essentially, you know, the police are allowed to create new law, basically. They operate literally above the law in these situations, because national security becomes everything. And I think that's one of the issues right now, that's the turmoil inside the RCMP. It's not one that's only involves the structure of the RCMP, which is, you know, dysfunctional, or the attitude of the people inside the force and the sick culture of the RCMP, but this politicization that comes right down from the top, from the commissioner on down. And I said, you know, Mr. Elliott, people see him as a civilian, and the easy thing to do is say, oh, here are the police railing against a civilian. But I can't reiterate enough that Mr. Elliott is anything but a civilian. I mean, he's a counterintelligence officer and has been that for about 10 years, and he was put in charge of the RCMP. And I think the entire Canadian media has missed this and has failed to pay attention to why he was put there, the time when he was put there, and the likely reasons for him being there. Because I think there are a number of issues inside government in Canada that are threatening to leak out, that are potentially catastrophic for government. And he is there to keep control on and keep a lid on the force. And that's my considered opinion.
Right, and do you have an opinion on the future of William Elliott? Do you think that this could cost him his job?
Well, I don't think he could last very long, because I don't think his underlings could last very long. I mean, if you look at the underlings who raised all the problems, they were the acolytes of the previous commissioner who was drummed out of office, and they were the architects of many of the problems the RCMP faced prior to 2007. That Elliott kept them on and didn't send them packing right away says something about what he was trying to do. Now that they're rebelling against him, it suggests to me that there's something else going on that you and I and the rest of Canada don't know, but we're going to be told about in the next couple of days or weeks or months. And that's the real catalyst for this brouhaha that's going on inside the force. I don't know what it is. I had my suspicions, but we'll see.
For sure, and yeah, I'll keep my ears open. But thanks a lot for bringing us this knowledge today, Mr. Paul Pelango.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, sir.
Bye-bye.
Peace. And that was Paul Pelango, the author of Dispersing the Fog. Dispersing the Fog's a book about the secret world of the RCMP, inside a look inside the secret world of Ottawa and the RCMP. Dispersing the Fog, you can find in the library. That's actually where I got it, but also at places where all good books are sold. You can get it online at dispersingthefog.com, dispersingthefog.com, and it's published by Key Porter Books. For some info on the RCMP, came out about a year and a half ago, and it's got, you know, it doesn't, it's not just about federal politics and the RCMP. It gets into international politics, it gets into CSIS, and it gets into a whole lot of issues that I'm sure you'd be interested in, and, well, I at least found it interesting. I guess not everyone would, but I thought it was interesting, and what's another... Another thing that I was thinking about, you know, with this whole situation in Canada, in security in Canada, as well as what we just saw last month with the G20, and what we can look out for in the future. Well, my hope is that it will. Things will be better in the future, and that, you know, things will get, hoping for more peace, hoping for, more justice. But with what we're seeing, and that the controversy is now at the heads of these organizations, it is trying times. So I'm going to play a track here, and then we're going to come back on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. But this one is by the artist 95.6. It's a track called Sosma. Word of Mouth Wednesday, 7 to 8 p.m.
Thug life talking how you run, but you ain't running nada. Bossman sleeping bed at night while you out running products. I deal with CEOs while you in kitchen cutting products. But it don't matter, cause in the end you both gon' burn the lava. Thug life talking how you run, but you ain't running nada. Bossman sleeping bed at night while you out running products. I deal with CEOs while you in kitchen cutting products. But it don't matter, cause in the end you both gon' burn the lava.
Come on,
lava,
make you the brownest butts fitting and graph up walls. Welcome to Toronto, it isn't Brooklyn or the Bronx. The pen is mightier than this sword, and I'm content to talk. But if it's a revolution that you want, then I gladly pick up blocks. I will put on a uniform and straight up bomb first. The bearer of bad news, the driver of your hearse. Tracks full of red rum, yes, murder in the first. Fill up hospital beds with third degree burns. Listen to what I rhyme about you, why do you think I wear a mask? It's 95.6, dumb, do the math. I'm ready for waterboarding, send me across the border. Duct tape my mouth shut so I don't talk about the order. Order, order, order in the courts. Military tribunals under Barack Obama's torch. Military dictatorships in full force. Airstrikes killing civilian casualties with no remorse.
Thug life talking how you run, but you ain't running nada. Boss man sleeping bed at night while you out running product. I deal with CEOs while you in kitchen cutting products. But it don't matter, cause in the end you both gon' burn the lava. Thug life talking how you run, but you ain't running nada. Boss man sleeping bed at night while you out running product. I deal with CEOs while you in kitchen cutting products. But it don't matter, cause in the end you both gon' burn the lava.
Restricted travel, tinsel tires, bags of my eyes, bags under my eyes. I spy with my eyes, life has got the smile. Sound sirens crying like candles. Never be happy, can never be free. Diaspora can never be me, can never be me. Never be me, never be me. In exile, now my feet ain't on the senselessness. See in Iraq, tensions rising, hatred arising. I can see it in their eyes, they smiling. But they wicked, deep looking at me so wickedly. Sick of me, an obstacle, cannot wait to get rid of me. Check my cue, it's 95.6 when the mob hits. Lock me up for terror when Rome falls with convicts. Stolen election, pretending to be president. You think John McCain was really running to be a president? So hide behind the images, those easy fix appendages. No remedy for ignorance. Humble your fall and make the call. It's easy, I can sense the urgency. Call 911 and tell them this is an emergency. 956 is after me. No hiding when you flip free. It says the urgency. Call 911 and tell them this is an emergency. Emergency, 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 emergency.
Newsflash, newsflash, newsflash. CKLN 88.1 FM broadcasting from Toronto. It is 7:32 p.m. And I just wanted to do a bit of a news flash here, because the headline is a bit surprising here. I'm going to read this one out. And this headline is coming from the Toronto Community Mobilization Network. And the headline is, G25 meter rule, charges against environmental organizer mysteriously disappear. And according to the article, Dave Vassy appeared in court today, July the 28th, 2010, relating to his arrest on June the 24th, only to find that the file was no longer on record, on paper, or on the police database. And Toronto Community Mobilization Network spokesperson Claudia Colabro said that the mysterious disappearance of the charges points to an ongoing conspiracy to evade accountability. So I guess this would be a conspiracy on behalf or on the part of the police and the justice officials who are evading accountability in the controversial regulations. Well, according to the Toronto Star report on the same situation, Dave Vassy, 31, was the only person charged under the controversial G20 regulation, that being the 5-meter rule. And, you know, as it turns out, the regulation that was billed in the media as a secret law granted granted the police the extraordinary powers, it turns out that the secret law was not a law at all, at least not as first reported, and that even Premier McGuinty eventually admitted that there was no 5-meter rule. So the only guy that had been charged under this 5-meter rule shows up to court and finds out that there is no case against, there is no charge against him, and that there's not even a paper there, not even a record in the computer police database. So what we're seeing is the cover up now, I guess, of the G20. What happened there? We got into a bit at the end of there with Paul Palango talking about the systemic problems he's seen through his research in the RCMP, and his research has been going on for decades now, talking about this. This is quite something. And the thing that we can do now, actually, because we're on the topic here of the G20, maybe it's a good time to actually throw it back to a blast from the past. What we didn't get to the week after the protest, but what we've been playing throughout the month have been a few of the audio clips that I got recorded from that weekend. So here is actually a clip of interview. Here's one of the interviews I did on the Friday, June the 26th, March. It was an Allen Gardens action. And I actually got to interview one of the OCAP organizers and, one of the, very intelligent person, Gaetan Hureau. Here is some words with Gaetan Hureau from the Allen Gardens protest.
We got a guest here. We're in Allen Gardens at the protest, G20. Do you mind introducing yourself?
My name is Gaetan Hureau. I'm a member of the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, and I've worked in this neighborhood for the last 20 years.
Nice. So we just heard John Clark speak, and he was talking a bit about the history of Allen Gardens. Is there some symbology to this location?
Oh, yes. This park has a long, long history of resistance, going back, as John said, to the 1930s, when the unemployed were organizing in this park to get relief and to get work. And in the summer of 1933, as a matter of fact, there was a huge, huge battle, a free speech battle that went on for almost a month. And every time that the ex-soldiers, many of them were ex-soldiers, would organize and get driven out of the park, they were promised to come back, and they came back, and eventually they won the right to gather in this park. It's very symbolic. In the mid-1960s, the neo-Nazis tried to organize in this park. Zundel's house is just down here. Over 5,000 people came out and drove them out of this park. It's known as the Allen Gardens Riot. So a lot of history. During the Harris years, this park was used on June 15th to mobilize and to march to Queen's Park. A safe park was set up. Lots and lots of history, this park, yes.
For real. And I heard you a few years ago giving a lecture about the history of Toronto, and you were even talking about, you even brought it back to like the 1800s and the Family Compact. And I guess, you know, I was wondering, here in 2010, do you believe like the G20 is a modern day Family Compact?
Well, that's a good analysis, actually, because it's a small world, and the Family Compact is dining and whining and sleeping in five-star hotels for the next 3 days. So these are poor people. Although, you know, when I was looking for that history, and there must have been poor people trying to resist back then, it's really hard to find that history. Toronto's first poorhouse was just down here during the 1837. That's when they built it. So it's really, really important to know that poor people have a long history of fighting for relief here, and also the fact that you say like these people are today, and that they try and pretend that everything is okay, while 5 minutes away, thousands and thousands of people are living in extreme poverty, is will not be tolerated by us.
Real, and it looks like we're moments away from the march. I guess, what are you expecting here in the march, and is there going to be a tent city coming up after?
I'm expecting a very loud, angry, militant march through the downtown core. If we're able to get to the fence, we'll go to the fence. But at the end of the march, I expect to take over a park. I expect people to set up tents and to take over the park and to be there throughout the G20 to remind people, but more importantly, for so that we can talk to each other, right? And so that poor people can be with each other and reaffirm that, no, we will not suffer in silence.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Gaetan Hiro.
Word up. So that was Gaetan Hiro at the June the 25th, 2010, Friday protest action at Allen Gardens. So it was a rally at Allen Gardens, and then it turned into a march downtown. And then I guess a lot of the people from the march went back to Allen Gardens, set up the tent city there, and then some people stayed, I guess, all weekend in that park. Or at least as long it was as it was open. I remember going to that park on that Friday, and then it was definitely the first time that I'd saw the size of the police presence at the G20. That they had been they were checking everyone's bag as you walked into the park, because they had the whole square block of Allen Gardens surrounded with police officers. For more, coverage of the G20, you can always check out my own YouTube channel, youtube.com/supportlocalscene. You can see the latest series that I put up there. It's a G20 Toronto Inquiry, Accounts of a Police Conspiracy. And it's a five-part series that gets into the conspiracy of, if the accounts of people's interactions with the police throughout the G20 weekend, and then I guess the conspiracy aspect of it is if this was all part of a well-laid plan that they're just trying to cover up right now, with things such as the dropping of the charges of the 5-meter rule, and as well the media focus on the continuing arrests of the so-called Black Bloc, which were not, I guess the majority of them weren't even arrested on the actual Saturday when all the damage happened. There's been this month-long hunt with that they're testing out their new technology using Facebook, trying to get the pictures out through Facebook, you know, maybe trying to convince some of the youth to turn their friends in, or, you know, that's sort of my own theory about why... if the police were asked to stand down, one of the reasons could be that they're just trying to try out their surveillance, their new surveillance gadgetry, as well as a psychological operation to see, in this day and age, 2010, if people see the pictures out and they know who they are, you know, how many people will turn in their you know, people they know, or how many people will turn themselves in, I guess. Well, you know, the whole thing was quite strange. You know, I finally got to, because I had taped a lot of, since I was out covering a lot of the G20, I didn't get to see much of what was going on that weekend in the media, but I had a few tapes that I finally got to. I finally got to watch a few of them yesterday. And, well, there was definitely some interesting coverage, and the most interesting was what the media was showing while that kettling drill was on. You know, the big finale, the grand finale of the G20, where they did a few hundred people, got them cornered in at Queen and Spadina. Because I was on the ground there at Queen and Spadina, stuck in the rain. I didn't get to see it, but I knew what was going on. I could see the helicopters flying over, and I knew, I had a feeling. I told the people that were standing around me, I'm like, I know this is, they're doing this for a media spectacle, and that right now we're probably on in a long shot. They probably got us all in a long shot, like, and they're probably saying on the media that we're, you know, that what's going on right now in this there's this, some sort of violent protest going on, and that we're the black bloc being trapped in. Even though when I was out there on the Sunday, you know, this is the day after the destruction, there wasn't, and before they kettled us, I didn't see anybody wearing black or, you know, I guess that's one of the things that they're trying to get this public inquiry going on, you know. But with this situation, well, I just don't know. I just don't know. What I do know, though, is that, one of the groups we interviewed right before the week of the G20, Test Their Logic, was one of the hits of the weekend with their track, GAG20 Crash the Meeting. The chorus became one of the chants throughout the protests. But here, just a throwback, just as we continue our throwback to 1 month ago with the G20 meeting in Toronto, this is a, this is a throwback, 2010 Toronto, Test Their Logic, GAG20, Crash the Meeting.
G20, they do we many. There's nowhere you can't go in the world without opposition to your plans. I'm making it twirl around your greedy fingers. We watching it swirl down the drain. Insane economics unfurl. See, we're not buying what you're selling, even with your propaganda telling media barons rebelling. We're yelling,
no justice, no peace in the streets.
It's just us versus the elite's police. See, a better world we see, so we're free when we speak. Oil's at its peak, and we got it a beat. The status quo will keep us unable to speak. On our knees saying please, we reap what we sow. So you know the whole plan is out of control. The goal to hold power while we get the blindfold. Truth be told, it's the same old song and dance. We're down to the wire, might be our last chance to advance. Humanity, take your stance. The power of the people, a street romance. United, we cannot be defeated. G20, we're ready, T-Dot, it's time to greet them.
G-A-G-20, they few, we many. G-A-G-20, they few, we many. Every single one of us has a reason. Together we're strong, let's crash the meeting. Every single one of us has a reason. Together we're strong, let's crash the meeting.
Chattering the so-called social peace. Windows getting smashed live on TV. 2010 is here, confront the beast. Reclaim the streets.
Lightened sovereignty.
Bringing that fire, it's incendiary. Cause they locking down streets with the military. And the progress is death, it's a cemetery. This ain't Canada, this is native territory. Turtle Island, East Coast of Salish. Colonizers just keep on taking. February 2010, confront invasion. G20, duly, Bay Street blazing.
During the time of crisis, I relied on about 10
Canadians with great expertise to give advice.
Destroy the SBB wherever it gets stationed. Take over everything with occupation. War of all, more self-determination. Social war against our nations. No control against domination. Against the empire and its colonization. Against the war and the government agents. Against authority for liberation. G-A, G20, they, you, we, many. G-A, G20, they, you, we, many. Every single one of us has a reason. Together we're strong, let's crash the meeting. Every single one of us has a reason. Together we're strong, let's crash the meeting. G-A, G20, they, you, we, many. G-A, G20, they, you, we many. Every single one of us has a reason. Together we're strong, let's crash the meeting. Every single one of us has a reason. Together we're strong, let's crash the meeting.
In the intermediate term, because of the challenges that we have in some of the bond markets and in Europe.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday, back here on the show. It's about 7:48 p.m. on our clock here at the station, CKLN 88.1 FM, broadcasting online, CKLN.fm, and on Rogers Cable on the channel 947. But on your radio, on the FM dial, 88.1 FM, you'll find us there. And it was good to see that CKLN was getting the word out during the G20, and there was a lot of special coverage going on here. So I'd like to thank the people that were working on that in CKLN, getting the word out during the G20. I didn't get to do as much radio stuff just because I was focusing on doing the video stuff, and then I was one of the videographers I got a lot of my coverage to Press for Truth a few days ago. That's what I was mentioning earlier in the show when I mentioned Stephen Davies and Dan Dix, some of the guys from Press for Truth. That I got my clips to them because they're working on some bigger documentary, pressfortruth.ca. Hopefully they'll, hopefully it won't take too long. But I know they got a lot of hours of footage to go through. I still got a lot of stuff that I'm going through too. But I've been getting some clips up on YouTube. YouTube.com/supportlocalscene was my channel again, and then. Just mentioning that because the past month, it's been an interesting month since the G20. I've actually been, for the past month, in the top 50 of Canadian directors on YouTube, which is the first time I've ever been in that. But I guess just because of a lot of my clips from the G20 have been getting a lot of views just recently. Now, back to our throwback to 4 weeks ago, 4 weekends ago, in the past, the G20 meeting. How about we go to another interview here. This is a quick interview here with the man who had, one of the men that was beside or with the one of the most recognizable posters or signs in the whole weekend of the whole G20 weekend was a sign that said "American Jobless Wanted." And it was on wheels, and it had a lot of American flags, so it was bright enough, colorful, and then and it had a printed sign in it, mostly sort of like a poster size one. Here's Conrad Martin explaining what the sign was. Here's the interview with Conrad Martin.
Daniel Libby, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're here in Allen Gardens. We got a rally going on. Looks like a march starting, and we got a guest here. Do you mind?
Conrad Martin from Toronto. And what we're doing, we're looking for American jobless to join us at the summit. Other jobless, so in a way we can tell the G20 exactly what needs to be done. And this is what we're doing, is just looking for jobless Americans. So we hope there's lots here today And we're sure there's some coming in tomorrow and the next day, since the president will be here. And we expect to give him some answers. Give him some answers on job creation.
Nice. And do you think the Tea Party is going to make it up north? Do you think there's going to be Americans?
I think we need some. We need some to shake things up, because even at this summit, unemployment is not on the table. The economy is, which is good, but the unemployment should be talked about, since you've got, especially in the States, there's 25 million unemployed out there. So we need to talk. We need to find answers. And it's a global problem, not just local. So that's why we welcome the American to sit with the Canadian and any other countries to come up with solutions.
Real, yeah. It seems like the march is going to start. So I guess have a good march.
You too now. Thank you.
Yeah, so that was a quick interview there with Conrad Martin. And Conrad Martin's actually, he's got a website too, which was on the poster. If you saw his big poster, American Jobless Wanted, poster on wheels, a rolling poster throughout the rolling sign throughout the weekend of the G20 protests. Well, on the sign, it said that his website, or it gave the URL on there, desperateunemployed.com. So if you're looking for more work by Conrad Martin and some of his thoughts on the ways to get out of so much unemployment throughout the world, check out desperateunemployment.com for info, desperateunemployment.com. And that is a major topic because of how worldwide the this worldwide economic recession has affected employment everywhere. And with what the major announcement was in the G20, and I've read the leaked communique. I read what the G20 leaders signed off on, the 20 greatest leaders in the world, or the greatest largest economies in the world, have a plan now to try to cut the deficits in half within the next 5 years. And this is coming at a time where, they're talking about they're going to do major cutbacks and stuff that's being funded now. Who can say what this will all lead to? With all the situations going on the G20 weekend, here's just another quick interview here, Francis McNutt, who was a legal worker walking around that I saw at the same the Allen Gardens rally event right before there was a march taking place, the G20. So this was early on in the G20, and here is what here's maybe from a bit of a legal perspective. Here's Francis McNutt's
Word up, word of mouth. Wednesday, we're here at the Allen Gardens protest, and we got a guest here. Do you mind introducing yourself?
Hi, my name is Fran McNutt, and I'm from Prepaid Legal Services.
Yes, and what do you do?
What we're doing is we're just trying to let people know that our company is out there, and just trying to create awareness about our company. We're a volunteer membership, and what we do is, we're publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange. We've been written up in Forbes magazine, Money magazine, very credible. We've partnered up with Mills & Mills Law Firm. They represent people like the Toronto Raptors and the Toronto Maple Leafs, very credible lawyers again. And what we're doing is offering a service that, you can get unlimited consultations on any matter, phone calls and letters written on your behalf, settlements of an estate, get your wills done, powers of attorneys. Also, we have a 24-hour access in case of arrest, detainment, police harassment, CAS involvement. You can call them 3 o'clock Christmas morning if that's the case, and a lawyer will walk you through exactly what to say and what to do to the people of authority.
We got a big protest here. People with the G20 summit going on, and activists are out in the park. Have you seen any legal situations here today? Is there anything at this protest?
Oh yeah, this is a great place for me to be today because, just walking around, they're trying to search people's bags as they're coming into the park. People are refusing. They're tackling them to the ground. And I'm thinking, these people should really have some kind of legal consultation to call and say, hey, is this right? Because we know, if they arrest you, then they have all right to go through your belongings. But if you haven't been arrested, then really they have no reason to be going through your belongings.
For real. And where can people go to get more information on them?
My website is Francis, F-R-A-N-C-E-S, M-C-N-U-T-T, .greatcareerplan.com. And that just goes through, you know, what our company is about. And if you're willing to, you know, get out there and network with people, there's also a job opportunity involved.
Thanks a lot for doing this work.
No problem. Thank you.
Word up. So that was the interview there with Francis McNutt, who was handing out, I guess, a flyer, info on the legal services that she's involved with, Prepay Legal Services. And her website, again, francismcnutt.greatcareerplan.com. And, you know, I thought that that was an interesting person to speak with just because of what was happening at that event. It was really the start, for me, it was the start of the G20 week. Well, it was a Friday, it was the G20 weekend. And then, you know, that's my first got to see, you know, the scale of the police and what was, you know, what happened with the protests. And well, even just at that, in that instance, there was a lot of people that didn't want to have their bags checked. You know, to get in the park, you had to have all your belongings checked. And you know, there was arrests going on. There was, you know, the media was all around. And then you know, it was definitely, you know, that was how the thing started off. I'm not sure how much business Francis McNutt had on that weekend, just because of how much, you know, if there's over 1,000 people like arrested and whatever, but the majority of those were never charged. And you know, as we're seeing with the headlines today, five meter rule charges against environmental organizer mysteriously disappear. This is the kind of cover-up we're seeing, that, you know, even charges are disappearing. So, you know, that'll wrap it up for our one-month review into the one-month-ago situation of the G20. But, you know, the protest continues, the hope for civil liberties continue, and, you know, people are still getting the word out. I just want to mention a few events here as we wrap up the Word of Mouth Wednesday. Tomorrow, Thursday, July the 29th, there's an event, Solidarity from the Devastation to Regeneration, Rebuilding a Sustainable Haiti. It's a presentation by an architect, Martin Hammer, of the Benefits for Builders Without Borders in Haiti. It's a free admission, but donations for rebuilding Haiti are welcome. And it's taking place tomorrow at 7 p.m., Thursday, July the 29th, at the Weston Harbor Castle, 1 Harbor Square, Toronto, in Pier 4 Room. And then this weekend, there's a big Scotiabank Caribbean Festival, formerly known as the Caravana. You know, that's going to be going on. So Toronto will be heating up. And then Saturday afternoons near Yonge and Dundas Square, the Toronto Truth Seekers usually have a street action going on. TorontoTruthSeekers.com for more info on that. And then what's coming next Tuesday, you got 7 p.m., there's going to be a public forum. And it's about the anti-Native organizing and Caledonia crisis, countering the right-wing backlash panel discussion, and it's going to be at OISE Room 5170, 252 Bloor Street West in Toronto. And you know, more info, you can check out rabble.ca for more info on events. And you know, check out Toronto Media Co-op .ca. Check out TorontoTruthSeekers.com. Check out CKLN.fm, and even check out our next show, which is the Blues Dr. Julie Hill, who is warming up here for a little bit of the blues, the Blue Remedy, that is, coming up. So stay tuned for the Blues Dr. Julie Hill. And thanks for listening. My name is Daniel Libby. This has been the Word of Mouth Wednesday. Word up, word of mouth, word is bond, word is...